You asked for it. Here it is. It's a podcast from Apathetic Enthusiasm.
Coming to you live from another dimension, a dimension of sight, of sound, and of mind. It's a journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of imagination. That's a signpost up ahead. It's Interdimensional RSS, the unofficial Rick and Morty podcast.
Thank you, Rod. Thank you for being here. Hello, everybody. My name is Travis.
Hey, everybody. I am Brandon, and we are happy to have you here with us today for another thrilling episode of Interdimensional RSS, the unofficial Rick and Morty podcast. We bring to you...
I got to call you out. You're totally bringing the submitted for your approval vibe to Interdimensional RSS. It's real weird. It's like a different flavor of Brandon.
Well, I appreciate you noticing that, Travis. And I hope that the fans out there also notice the vibe change that I am trying to bring to the show, because we have serious content to talk about. What I like to do, but before we get into all the conversations every time, is I like to push the social media stuff out up front. So I'm going to go ahead and do that. X at Rick and Morty Pod, Facebook, facebook.com/ Rick and Morty Podcast. We are also on Instagram, Rick and Morty Podcast. Email, you can email us at rickandmortypodcast@gmail.com. Of course, we are on Blue Sky, rickandmortypod.bsky.social. And I do have, as a matter of fact, some shout outs for our Blue Sky social media post of the week. Who, me?
You're really selling submitted for your approval right now.
Who, me? Alex Fearer following us on Blue Sky. And Soda Pop, Die Misses, following us. Also, we got a few shout-outs. We're going to save some Blue Sky shout-outs over in the short-out section of our show. Anyways, let's go ahead and finish this. You can go over to the Reddit, our subreddit, rickandmortypodcast.reddit.com. You don't need to go there. But you can go to rickandmorty.reddit.com. For discussion posts when the season is airing, live discussion posts, also some cold open stuff. I think one of the things I want to do is there's a lot of posts talking about season 7 review. Like, this is my season 7 review. Oh, this is my season 7 review. And, you know, I want to hear people's voices, but Automod will catch it if you say voices. So instead, what I'll do is maybe put like a master post out there and be like, hey, what are your thoughts on season 7 on top of all of your posts? So if you can have some
smart
arguments.
That's well thought out, Brandon.
As a pinned post. Anywho, streaming, we're not streaming live, but you can catch us pre-recorded youtube.com/apatheticenthusiasm. And of course, if you appreciate what we do, as we appreciate what you do, you can go to patreon.com/apatheticenthusiasm. And maybe throw us a dollar, throw us two, throw us 20, like a one-time $20. Dollar.
Buy us a beer. Come on. Come on.
All right. Well, Travis, how are things going with you over there in your neck of the woods?
Feeling good. The holidays are upon us. It is the most busiest time of the year. The season is over. There's so much to talk about. There's so much to think about. We hopped on a live stream immediately after the season finale last night. So sorry if you missed that. But yeah, it was fun getting to talk about the season as a whole, as well as the season finale. But yeah, I don't know. I'm good. I'm ready for this time of renewal, this time, the new year, new things happening, all sorts of news, right? All sorts of news, sort of things. Like, some of it's important. Uh-huh. Some of it's not as important.
Yeah.
You might call it semi-pertinent news.
Semi pertinent news.
It sounds like a motorcycle drove past you and the exhaust got in your face just as you were about to sing the semi pertinent news jingle.
Yeah, so they tried to shift, and it was like the bad timing for the clutch. and then it backfired out of like a like a bad muffler. Anyways, I'm working on a 63 Corvette, and so it's very true to my heart right now. This
yeah, you're such a car guy. That's the things I always say about you, Brandon. You're such a sports fan. You're such a car guy.
I installed a radiator the other day.
I wouldn't doubt it for a second. Anyway. All right, here's some of my pertinent news. The last one of season 7. And the first one is very interesting. This is an article that Brandon found, actually. Over at comicbook.com, the headline is very punchy. Rick and Morty showrunner teases a full 10-season saga.
Ooh.
What the heck is happening? 10-season saga, Brandon?
Oh, my. Unbelievable. Semi-pert, if I've ever heard of a semi-pert. So Scott Martyr, who we were unable to interview with the day that we had interviews. I think he maybe they had 2 days of press junkets. So he got to talk to some folks over at comicbook.com. And he says, I can tell you that we've already got a couple ideas for season 10 that are already kind of pinned. There's a full plan for a full 10-season saga. So if people are on board with what we've been doing the past couple of seasons, we're intending to give them more of that. But there are certainly arcs and cool things and big surprises in store. Something to look forward to if you're a fan of Rick and Morty and this past couple of seasons.
Yeah. Yeah, something to look forward to. That's wild to think about. And it's something that I, as a fan of the show, as a person that has watched this season unfold with the arc of Rick Prime, I'd be lying if I didn't say I'm curious what was in store, what was next, what would be that next big arc. The evil Morty arc seemed to span like almost 6 seasons. It dipped its toes into season 7 even. So yeah, for them to approach the show with a big idea, with an idea that could span a decade potentially, that's really interesting to think about. It's really interesting to hear Scott Martyr talk about, and it's really scary. It's something I would find in my own personal fear hole, the idea of doing this podcast at a minimum for another decade. We'll see what happens. We'll
at
see.
A Who minimum. Knows? Oh boy, that would be something else. And hopefully we're official by then.
Yeah, by then, if we still haven't talked to Dan, something is terribly wrong.
Look, you guys can keep talking to Brandon and Travis. I'm not going to. I'm making it a point of it. All right. So moving on, here's something we do every year. We do an episode Christmas gift guide for the holiday season. Well, yeah, I'm wearing a Merry Rickmas shirt right now. This is the last episode before. Well, we're going to do one more episode before Christmas, probably, most likely, because we have an interview that we want to show you. But I want to put this out there. Anyways, we do a gift guide every year. And in this year, we don't have its own episode. Christmas is right around the corner. But we do have a few kind of gifts. There's not a whole lot of merchandise except for mugs and socks and ornaments and all that fun stuff. There's a Rick and Morty mug and socks and ornament gift set over at boxlunch.com. You won't get that before Christmas, but good luck. There's always
maybe if you have like a box lunch in the mall and they happen to have this there, you can pick it up. But
yeah. I've been checking my box lunch at the mall. It's not happening. Not happening.
Not happening.
There's some ugly Christmas sweaters. Of course, those are fun. Over at the WB shop, That's where you want to go for WB shop. I don't know what you're looking at, Travis.
I'm just showing them all the stuff that you. I have all the links open, so okay. I'm just showing that while you talk about it. Okay. I'm looking at a Rick and Morty fear hole adult sweatshirt.
Yeah,
we're talking crew neck.
So the fear hole merchandise over at WB shop, it came out before the episode actually came out. So you eagle-eyed fans saw that, and some posted in the subreddit ahead of time. I didn't know that until after I saw some moderation. It's like, oh, well, I found out on my own about the WB shop. Anyway, fear hole. That's probably not a shirt I would buy, but
typically I wouldn't. But I will say the design, like if they took the Rick and Morty fear hole part off of it and it was just the design, it's a cool spiral design where you have the outline of Rick's head And on the inside of that is the outline of Morty's head.
Yeah.
And then that pattern repeats where it's like just going down Rick and Morty like silhouettes. It's kind of a cool design. It's subtle.
Yeah.
It looks like a hole.
It looks like a hole. It also has there's another fear hole piece of merchandise on there that feels like Twilight Zone-y, Outer Limits-y, Night Gallery-y that I appreciate. And then of course they got the Rick and Morty official coloring book there.
Gotta have it. I like that the cover is an homage to the Norman Rockwell painting where Norman Rockwell is like painting himself, but like looking in a mirror, like it's self-portrait, right? There's a version of it where Mickey Mouse is looking at a picture of like Walt, but drawing Mickey. It's weird.
Wow.
It's meta. Okay. Anyway, Rick and Morty coloring book. If you like coloring, it can be therapeutic. This season has been all about mental health.
There's some more shirts too. So, anyways, lots of clothes and shirts and
links in the show notes. Go check them out.
We don't. And full disclosure, we get no money from commission. So
$0, not a sponsor.
We didn't even use
Box Lunch. Call us up, Box Lunch. I've worked them out all day.
We have an affiliate code over at Amazon that we never use for anything.
Not once.
Links in the show notes. All right. Before we get into the thing that we talk about, where it's the main thing that we're talking about, we have one last bit of semi-pertinent news. And of course, that is the Dan Harmon social media minute.
Dan Harmon, social media minute. That's right. He's posting. He's posting on Threads. He's posting on Instagram. He's doing things. I don't know for sure whether or not this post was made before our last episode or not, but it cracked me up. So we're going to talk about it anyway. The caption for this is, of course, my Baldur's Gate power move. The key is eye contact. And basically, this is a video that he posted. If you've played Baldur's Gate, you know that clothing's optional. You don't actually have to wear any armor or anything like that. So this is a video of Dan and his Baldur's Gate character completely naked. It's mostly blurred out. for the sake of not getting pulled off of Instagram. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's a risky move playing Baldur's Gate without any clothes, because that armor's gonna improve your armor class.
Yeah,
at least,
you got it.
Right?
I mean, you gotta wear a little bit of armor. Otherwise, well, his base armor is probably like 10, which is a really low roll. You know, you don't wanna be that low, unless you have natural armor. But I don't think he's playing a character with natural armor, so.
Also in this video, he rolls an 18 wisdom save. So, yeah, check it out at Dan Harmon on Instagram. That's your Dan Harmon social media minute.
Thanks, Travis. Thanks. That's good. I'm also playing Baldur's Gate now with my kid, and he's like, "Dad, you rolled
still in Act One.
You rolled still a critical one." Yeah, still in Act One.
I talk to people at work about Baldur's Gate, and they've been playing since it came out, and they're like, "Yeah, I'm still in Act One. So I'm done." I'm like, you're playing really slow. I'm sorry. There's no way you're still in Act One.
And they're level 5. Anyways.
Yeah.
All right.
That's it for semi-pertinent news. As we move into the postseason, as we move into the break between the seasons, if you see any Rick and Morty news that seems even semi-pertinent, please send us an email, shoot us a message on any of our socials. Let us know if you see a story that is worth talking about, and we will more than likely cover it on a future episode. And now, when we come back from this break, we will be getting into everything and anything that your fears can handle. We'll be back with the main thing right after these messages. Thank you. Thank you for letting us pay the bills. A bill, maybe. I don't know. Water, trash, or something like that. Anyway, we're back, and it is now time to break down the final episode of Season 7 in a segment we like to call The Main Thing.
All pretty ladies around the world, main thing.
That's
that's it. All right, we're
at, my body wasn't ready for that.
It's season 10, season 7, episode 10, Fear.
Season 10, 10 decades of Rick and Morty.
Saga.
100 years. I stayed up late last night doing the live stream, yeah, so did. I'm a little punchy tonight.
Yeah, you are. I can see it. It's emanating off of you. Fear No More, air date 12/17/2023, written by Heather Ann Campbell. Also wrote That's a Morte, directed by Eugene Huang, who this is the first time they've directed an episode for the show. Congratulations. Welcome to the club. The main guest star here is Ryan Elder, of course. But there's a lesser known actor, Liev Schreiber, who, you know, he does the Hard Knocks on HBO. He does a lot of narration, and it doesn't sound like Liev Schreiber. It's strange. It's the damnedest thing.
Weird. Is it?
Trippy.
Weird.
Strange.
The bronopsis for this episode. Only thing to fear is fear itself, bruh.
And our synopsis goes, we all fear something. Am I right?
Something. Yeah. I mean, you might fear terrible posture. Who knows?
Yeah.
Anyway, interesting episode. We talked about it in our post-show stream. If you couldn't make that, don't worry, because we're going to rehash all of it right here for you right now. Title reference, Fear No Evil from 1981. Brandon's using IMDb's synopsis for this one. High school student turns out to be the personification of Lucifer. Two archangels in human form, as women, take him on.
That's right. Now, here's what I'll say about that. Very, very apropos to this episode, because Morty's a high school student, and there's...
That's where the similarities end.
there are women in it, and so I really think it's an appropriate title reference. Fear is such, going into the actual topic of the show, fear is heavily referenced. Obviously, it's in the title. The whole plot is about fear, facing your fears, and the fear hole. And so. I think the best way to discuss this episode is to talk about what I had for dinner last night. It's fear.
Yeah.
And you should fear what I had for dinner last night.
Well,
I don't remember what it was.
Brandon,
I don't think I ate dinner last night.
I grew up in the 80s and 90s, and in the early 90s, I wore t-shirts, and those shirts, they said no fear on them.
That's right.
So right. I'm not scared of anything.
why wasn't that a plot point in this episode? First of all, there's a movie that,
because it's like a 30-year-old reference.
Well, funny you say that. Just a real quick aside. There's a slasher movie on Hulu, I think, or Amazon Prime, called Totally Killer. And it's about this young girl who gets chased into the past, into the mid 90s. And one of the jokes is all the no fear shirts that are going on. Is it no? I had a backwards. No, it's in Scott Pilgrim. Yeah, it's in Scott Pilgrim. I'm mixing my references. Anyways, okay, fear.
Anyway. So yeah, fear is a overall theme in this episode. I thought it was really interesting for them to open the episode with that horror carnival type thing. And really show how desensitized Rick and Morty have become to things that are traditionally scary or that would be scary to, you know, the normal person. They've gone on seven seasons worth of adventures. They've been to all the far ends of the universe and different dimensions, different realities. So yeah, they're a little desensitized to things. And everything in that carnival is sort of what we would traditionally think about as scary, you know, creepy looking monsters, there's spiders, clowns, those sorts of things. And the direction that the show moves in is less about those traditional things that you would immediately think of as scary and gets really into some like emotional types of fears and like fear, interpersonal type fears about relationships. So really the closing out a season that talks a lot about mental health and developing emotionally, they close it not with some epic battle with Rick Prime, but a battle with, you know, emotional safety.
Yeah, psychological safety. Which people at work are like, what are you talking about, Brandon? Psychologically. So yeah, that's one thing I wanted to talk. This episode is like a much more subtle and specific version of the Pixar film Inside Out, in the sense that it's about it shows us an evolution of being afraid and like what we're afraid of. We start at the carnival. Bear with me, Travis. I know you're like, this, no, this is stupid. You're not
reaching.
You're not being insightful. It starts at the carnival, right? And it's like, those are things that like you wouldn't show Bob Carroll, our friend Bob Carroll, because he's deathly afraid of anything remotely scary, let alone like graphic and grotesque. And then eventually, like, you get into the more philosophical fears of what we have. It's a more adult fear. We all have things that we feared as kids, right? Like the clowns, spiders, Freddy Krueger, Jason.
That boat in the Willy Wonka movie.
Yeah. You know, the sponge from Goosebumps, the Goosebumps episode where the sponge is evil. Those types of things. Or the clown from
Are You Afraid? The fears we all have.
but then it evolves. And we can see variations of that fear, of those different types of fears in the episode. You go from Jerry, who's afraid of spiders, deathly afraid of spiders. You go to even Beth, like being a little subtle fear of like not being able to spend the time with her mom, right? Get that chance to spend time with her. And maybe nothing from Summer. I like her a little bit about the zit that she became queen over.
I thought, you know what I love about that? And I didn't put it in favorite bits, but it's some sort of innocuous, as far as this show goes, conversation where Summer is explaining that Rick helped her sort of create a civilization from the things that were living on the zit, and she ruled as queen. And Diane's immediate response is, it sounds like you guys are a real family. Like, that's the takeaway.
I love that.
From that. Yeah, no,
that conclusion.
That cracks me up.
But you know, like I won. And as we grow older, some of us maintain those fears. I had like porcelain dolls. I was scared to death of porcelain dolls for a while. They're just
mostly because they'll eat your soul.
They're just so creepy. I watched this movie Dolls back in the day, and the dolls are actually good guys, but I was still super, super afraid of them. Yeah. But then I grew up and, now I don't keep them in my house and I'm fine.
Yeah. But everything's fine.
But now I'm scared of what they represent. Witches stealing souls of dead children that they've eaten and cooked in a crock pot or an Instapot.
Maybe. I mean, it's 2023. Yeah. There's a lot of options. So nearly 2024.
Like what were you afraid of? Like a simple fear when you were a kid that you were afraid of, and like what are you afraid of now?
I was afraid of I was afraid of the Willy Wonka boat. I was afraid of the Wicked Witch of the West. I used to hide behind the couch. Just like, oh, the Pee Wee Herman toy, the doll, that was like, that was a unexplainable fear. Like, it was on Christmas. We're talking about, you know, it's Christmas time. And my uncle got that Pee Wee Herman doll. I love Pee Wee's Playhouse. But for some reason, like, the advertisement on the side of that doll said that, like, he, like, it made it look like he walked around, and that scared the crap out of me. Like, I was terrified of the idea. I actually, this summer, saw that same doll in a toy museum. I may have sent you a picture of it. But yeah, I don't know, full circle.
I have that doll at my parents' house. Next time you come visit, I'll bring it out for you.
Yeah, we'll do some like, what's it called? Immersion therapy or something?
Yeah. So what are you afraid of now compared to back then?
Mostly like climate change and economic insecurity. I mean, that's mostly it.
That's fair. That's fair. Yeah, same deal. My buddy, afraid of my buddy.
It's raining on Christmas. It's not snowing. That's all I'm saying.
Afraid of my buddy. Afraid of. I had a T-Rex stuffed animal that I thought was going to eat me. And then you know, getting older. Afraid of like, you know, not being good enough for my friends and family, right? Things like that.
Not measuring up.
Afraid that I can't support people, you know?
Much like us as people, this show evolves in the fears that it takes on.
And that's I've
composed a list of the fears that Morty and Rick, although Rick is never officially in the fear hole, that they deal with, and it starts much like we did as children, afraid of things like belly button magnets.
Oh yeah,
or maggots.
Magnets.
Yeah.
Well, I'm afraid of belly button magnets too, especially if you have. Yeah. A
don't
piercing.
Swallow those magnets, kids. That's bad news. But oh, my button, the maggots. We talked about spiders, and then we get into some more of those more, you know, cerebral type fears.
The fear
of being
good word
accepted. Being responsible for Rick's sadness, afraid they'll never get out of the hole because Rick will never admit that he's afraid.
Yep.
Afraid of being certain about something and still turning out to be wrong.
Yep.
$8 bacon.
$8 side of bacon.
You know, it has levels. It deals with capitalism, things like that. Anyway, fear of the hole itself. Morty's fear of turning into Jerry. And then eventually what we discover is the fear that is really being dealt with. And that's Morty's fear that he relies too much on Rick, that he's like replaceable, or not irreplaceable, which is interesting. He comes out having dealt with that, and we see only briefly another step in Morty's maturity, where he's accepting of the fact that Rick is not dependent on him. And is okay with that, and is somewhat at peace with this idea that maybe he doesn't have to rely on Rick. I'm curious how that will play out in future seasons, if it will play out in future seasons, maybe in some epic 10 season arc.
Yeah, maybe so. And you know, I like the exploration of that little bit. Yeah, like the supernatural aspect of the fear hole, eating that fear and then you being free of it. From a supernatural perspective, that's cool. But I also like just the idea from just real life with us, like acknowledge not only like it's like going through this is another therapy episode. Like it's going through therapy and like figuring out, okay, like what is going on with my head? Like, what am I really reacting to for things? Right. And, like that exploration helps us be like, okay, you know what? I think I know what's going on. I can let go of that. Now that I've acknowledged it, I've taken away its power. Once you take away its power, you're free to kind of build forward momentum and to a brighter future for you and yourself.
Yeah, I think talking about taking away its power, like early on in the episode, Rick and Morty call out that they realize they're still in the hole, and that knowing that you're in the hole, like allows you them to like tap into other fears or things like that. And it also does something, you know, for the audience, for us to not be like guessing the whole episode. Oh, do you think they're still in the hole? Do you think they're not? Like them calling out and realizing it early takes away the power of that twist. And then they play into it a little bit later where it's twist, 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 twist. And all along, the twist isn't, are they in the hole or aren't they in the hole? It's who is in the hole.
Yeah.
And we find out that it was, Rick was never in the hole to begin with. So, yeah, I don't know. I think played very well and was an interesting way of, what does Morty say in the garage? A double misdirect. They kind of pull it off, you know, making us super focused on whether or not they're in the hole instead of whether or not they're both in the hole.
Yeah. Yeah. And I meant to look up the quote before we recorded tonight, but I'd mentioned a couple times that one of the first things Rick says to Morty is basically what Morty's afraid of is like, like being afraid of doing things alone. Something in nature, somebody can correct a quote for me. I'm not good with quotes. All right. But you know, I think it's interesting that the fear hole is very early on telling Morty, hey, this is your thing, man. And Morty is refusing to see it, right? And sometimes that's the thing with the things that we are worried about, our fears. We start looking for other excuses, other reasons, other things to be afraid of, where we're not getting at the root cause of why we're stuck in a certain place. So yeah. So I like that little aspect of it in a way. So eventually there's something I wanted to talk about, but I'll just say eventually they do get out of the hole multiple times. And I guess maybe we don't want to go that far yet. Let's talk about Diane's stuff.
I mean, we talked about the theme, the overarching theme of fear, but there's another theme kind of running throughout that. And it mostly happens in the first timeline where they realize they're still in the hole, but they're working through the fears and they're in the living room, and suddenly out of nowhere, OG Rick,
yeah,
shows up clutching a version of Diane. He melts away into ash, and suddenly we have a situation where Rick has an opportunity to reconnect with his long lost wife, Diane. And the show kind of starts to deal with these ideas of attachment, right? Rick's attachment to his past wife, Morty's attachment with Rick. There's a lot going on between, you know, different people trying to kind of figure out who they can rely on and who's important to them.
Yeah. I was trying to think back. One of the things about the twist that I've read on Reddit and stuff like that is Morty, Diane, right? Like we see Diane, we see a lot of her, the relationships between the characters. We see how Rick is interacting with her, and there's a thought, well, none of that was real because it's Morty's perception of it. And I've been thinking about that. I know, like, I kind of got away from what you're asking, but
no. This is kind of the direction I wanted to get towards anyway.
OG Rick falls through the ceiling. He's clutching Diane, right? And so I had the thought right now, like, well, how did Morty even know that? I was like, oh, well, Morty has seen that happen in a previous episode, right? Like he's seen like the history of Rick going through the ages and like his explanation of it. Right.
That's right. That's right. Oh, dead wife. That's his response. Right?
Yeah.
When he sees all of Rick's memories.
So he sees all of Rick's memories. We, the audience, see part of those memories, right? We see what we need to see as part of the audience. But it just occurred to me, like, it's very feasible that Rick that Morty has seen other aspects of the past of Rick's life with Diane that makes what we see here actually not too inaccurate.
Yeah.
There's a path forward to have that make sense.
We had that conversation a little bit last night, but when you think back all the way to the season three premiere, you have that first introduction to the idea of how Rick develops interdimensional travel. It's where we see Diane for the first time. It's how we see how he lost his family. It's the introduction of Rick Prime. And throughout all of that, there's this cloud where we're like, oh, all right, this turns out to be a misdirect. They never left the Shonies. And Rick is hacking the system so that he can break out and do these things. And for years, we were uncertain how much of that was true. How much of that was true about Diane? And it's only been over the last couple of seasons where we've gotten to see reinforcing of that idea that Rick pulled from reality to create that scenario. He really did lose Diane that way. And so I think for some of the things that we learn in the course of this finale, I think it's safe to assume that some of that, even though there's like a weird mixed up way of it coming to pass, like I think some of it has to be genuine, just because of the way that the writers have sort of constructed things in the past, like that we get a little tidbit in this episode where we learn a little bit about how Rick and Diane met, right? When that robot comes out and he's trying to fix it and he's like, oh yeah. She says, I think I've seen one of these robots before. And he's like, yeah, I built one for the feds. The unnamed faceless feds that he builds robots for. That's how he met his wife, right? And so I think it's interesting that we can take the interactions with Diane in this episode and not just throw them away. I think that there's still value into looking into the interactions between the characters.
Yeah, my you know, as we talked last night at the live stream, my first inclination was to be like, well, I mean, it was the fear hole. The whole thing with the fear hole is it's Morty's perspective. So the fear hole takes what Morty would assume Diane was like, and to have Rick want to be with her, she has to be cool, she has to be outgoing, she would be partying, she has to get that humor, she has to be accepting of craziness, right? And Morty takes that and like kind of creates an image of her, an idea of her using using the fear hole. That was kind of the direction I went last night. But you know, thinking more about it and thinking about just how like you need to be able to take some of these elements and build off of them to have a story. This isn't like the oft quoted or referenced cat that talks. And what is a cat talk? And why do we like, oh no, what did a cat do? Oh, it's so disgusting. No, Jerry, you need to forget. It's to me, it's not like that. Like that is, that's a funnier gag that we never find out. And we never want to find out lest we all puke and be disgusted.
It's so foul.
This one is like there. You don't want to cheapen anything that we see of Diane. You don't want to make any of that not completely fabricated. You don't want to make it completely fabricated. You want to at least keep some aspects of it. Like the fear hole knows some of these things are true. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Which kind of leads me into, and we've talked about this a little bit. We've hinted at the fact that we got to sit down and interview some of the cast and crew from the show a couple of weeks ago. And one of the things that we brought up in that interview was when we were talking with Sarah Chalk, the voice of Beth, about the fact that this is the first time that we've really seen Beth have an opportunity, especially adult Beth, to interact with Diane and sort of rekindle that relationship. So we asked her about it. We asked her, you know, sort of what it was like to get to have that experience with Beth's mom. In the season finale, for the first time, we get to see a version of like adult Beth interacting with a version of her mom, Diane. How did you approach those scenes where Beth was getting to reconnect with like her long lost mother? Did you look at that in any different sort of way?
I loved that the show went there. I think it was so powerful and so cool. And, you know, and I think it's really neat that they waited till, you know, it's like seven seasons to get there. I think it's probably obviously a moment that Beth dreams about, right? It's a moment that everybody would wish for,
yeah,
and that you never really get to have. And so those were actually really cool to record. We, you know, tried it a bunch of different ways and sort of with different levels of emotion. Yeah, that was one of my favorite moments of the season for sure.
So there you go. It was one of her favorite moments of the season, or at least that's what she said in the interview. But I do think that it's really cool to not just explore Rick and Diane's sort of relationship or lack thereof, but that's something to me that's always kind of stuck out, is there had to be so many versions of realities where, you know, like Diane was around a little bit longer or something to allow for Beth to grow up with a mom or something like that, because Rick was gone. There's still something in that timeline around Beth's adolescence where, like, is Rick gone? Is Beth being raised by Diane? Like, what's happening there?
Yeah.
Right. And so
Fruity Land, right, is still a thing.
Fruity Land. Yes.
Yeah, I'm thinking in the episode where talking about Morty's fear of being replaceable, irreplaceable, and with like Rick coming to the realization that, yeah, hey, I gotta let you die, Beth, because Morty doesn't have to die too, and like that playing into Morty's fear that that Rick wouldn't really do that.
yeah, he might not. He probably wouldn't.
And what I think is powerful about that juxtaposition with the end of the episode, where we see Rick, you know, it mirrors that the time that Morty runs in and jumps in the hole. We see Rick also run in that same way, run up to the hole, thinking about being with Diane again. And then deciding, takes the picture of Morty out of his wallet and puts it on the corkboard. You know, it's like it doesn't acknowledge to Morty that he's essentially irreplaceable, but
yeah,
it acknowledges to the viewer that Rick behind the scenes really truly does care about the boy, that he keeps a picture of him in his wallet.
Yeah, and go so far as to honor the journey that Morty went on by making sure his picture goes up with the other three people that have gone in the hole. Which gets to the last couple of themes, right? The ideas of loss, the ideas of letting go. I'd argue letting go has been something that's been a theme throughout the season as we look at Rick having to learn to move on from letting go of his pursuit of Rick Prime, letting go of his attachments to Diane, like that sort of drove a lot of that pursuit, and refocusing and accepting the family that he has, the family that he's connected with now, and being present in that, right? It's so emotional and like it's like mental stuff for a show that still has like a lot of dick and fart jokes, like, but it's, I don't know. They deal with some real serious topics here.
They do. And even like there's the gag about Morty turning into Jerry, you know, turning into his dad, which, you know, that's a legitimate fear some of us have. But before that gag even gets kicked off, right, all of that stuff where they're like, we may still be in the hole, but let's not acknowledge anything. Like, let's just go. Let's just roll with it. We're okay. thank you, Hole. Appreciate your time. And that whole song by Ryan Elder, and they're like just going through adventures and like they're eyeballing each other because they're like, they don't know if this is like, is what is this? What is
when they're sitting at like the dinner table, like looking at the other family members, like,
yeah, Morty lying awake on the bed. And then when they go sit on the couch and like, Morty's in class, the one kid talks to him and laughs. And then Morty laughs, but then looks out the window suspiciously. And then eventually
the thing that's crazy to me about that, and it took me, I think, 3 or 4 viewings to really process, is the fact that through that montage, we see all these clips and it goes by kind of fast. But like, Morty's growing up in those clips. Like, Morty goes to college. Summer gets married. Morty, like, buys his first home and, like, gets into middle age and realizes he's Jerry before he realizes that fear and snaps out of it and is out of the hole again, right? So, like, that's, like, 30 years probably.
Yeah.
At least 20 years. And, like, did they experience that time? Like, did they live that entire lifetime in the hole, right? Before they're like, oh, shoot, that wasn't a real thing. And then snaps out of it. I don't know. That's some other level stuff. But
I mean, how mature does Morty have to be at this point in time that he's done this?
Like a time god.
He's done like a time he's god. Done this lifetime. He's done Roy. He's done so many things. The one thing where he had the button, where he kept doing the button over and over again.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. The reset button.
And he's lived through so much. And then when we see him again, he's still a dumbass kid.
Still an emotionally immature, like 15-year-old.
Yeah.
So
we do see him picking stuff up, but I do think it's always a funny gag to live through all that stuff. But that's what I was like, okay, now I know it's coming. But then they get out of the hole. And then the thing I want to talk about, the last thing I want to talk about before we get into our favorite bits, and maybe you have something before I do, is also how this episode is framed. There's no A and B plot. There's strictly an A plot. I want to say that the fans of Reddit are saying like this is one of the best episodes of the season, if not the series. Everything is in extremes. Basically, we're all Sith in the Rick and Morty Reddit. But
only Rick and Morty fans deal in absolutes.
But the way the episode goes, again, only A plots, but it gets broken up in like such a kind of a jarring way sometimes, which isn't a bad thing necessarily, because it feels like it's going one direction. It's going one direction with all those kids and love that singing band One Direction. And then they get out of the hole. And then it turns into something different. And like every time I've watched it, I feel like kind of like a momentum shift where I'm like, sure. Like when you're on a roller coaster and you like it's slowing down to the gates and then it goes,
it hits those brakes in the middle of the ride and you're like, oh
yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you go down another hill. Yeah.
It kind of felt like that. And that, but I think it was overall pretty successful still. I kind of wanted to gauge your kind of feelings about, did you feel the same way?
I was in a very strange headspace the first time I watched the finale, and it was because I was watching it right after Rise of the Numericons had aired, and we had already recorded our episode. It's talking about how much we enjoyed that episode, and then the fans came out just completely hating it, and so I was, and then like the next day I watched the last 2 episodes of the series. And I was in like a weird headspace where I'm like, you don't think that episode's good? Well, I don't know if these episodes are good. Right. And I obviously rewatched them several times. It's like, no, these are fantastic episodes. Right. Yeah. But, the first time I watched it, I was like hypercritical of it. I was like, is this going to be well received by fans? Are fans going to like this? is the fact that it deals more with the emotional storyline as opposed to some big, you know, canon arc. Is that something the fans are going to appreciate? And the more I watched it, the more I was like, yeah, no, this is a really solid episode. So I was happy to hear that a lot of fans really appreciating it. And I genuinely forgot what you asked me in the first place.
About the momentum shift and just how the episode is laid out, switching then to the end of the episode after they
get it's unconventional, right? Unconventional sort of process. I don't think this was a cookie cutter example of Dan Harmon's story circle, but I do think there's probably aspects of it still, and I like it. I like that they were able to have the slow burn in the middle of sort of that main storyline and then rapidly kick up all of those realizations of what the whole and kind of play on that gag right up until the end when it becomes serious and you have the realization by Morty what he's actually dealing with in the whole.
Yeah.
And that visualization of Rick turning into like a speaker box. Thank you for visiting the hole or whatever. Like, yeah. I think that's a great gag. I love that.
Which brings us to our final part of this episode, which is favorite bits. We got so many favorite bits. So we'll
prattle them off at a rapid pace.
As we do, the Carnival of Nightmares that opens this episode. Bunch of scary, grotesque things.
How many spookies?
It's like a Cronenberg type of thing. And I don't reference Rick and Morty. I reference actual Cronenberg for that, where it's just like it's body horror. I see some spiders in the background. So I like that there's a Carnival of Nightmares that they go to and they're like, eh.
With the immediate introduction to a character that I'm sure you are excited to see.
Oh yeah,
this Rod Serling type suit guy. I don't know what else to call him other than that. I don't think he's ever named specifically in
the man. I'll call him the man. Yeah. So we talked about this on live stream. People talked about it ahead of time. Just seeing the cold open, they're like, oh, that looks an awful lot like Rod Serling, or at least an homage to Rod Serling from the Twilight Zone, which, and you know, I'd seen the episode before a lot of the fans did. So I was like, some people were like, oh, maybe it's like another interdimensional cable type episode where they're going to be like showing like a bunch of like short story clips, kind of like how Futurama had done a few times. But I love Rod Serling. Heather Ann Campbell wrote for the Twilight Zone reboot for Jordan Peele, three episodes. So she's a fan. I know she's a fan. I love Rod Serling from Twilight Zone and Night Gallery. And as a person, he is super inspiring just from a principal standpoint. I recommend anybody kind of look him up and what he did for TV in the early 60s.
I wonder if my admiration for Walt Disney is like your admiration for Rod Serling. I wonder if those are like our parallels. Like those are our like mid-century heroes.
Early on in our apatheticenthusiasm.com blog space, we did actually have a blog about Rod Serling and Walt Disney and about how they are for each other. I do want to also point out about that Rod Serling guy is he shows up. He takes them to the Denny's. Now, we'll talk about Denny's here in a second, but there's a show that was on Hulu called The Booth at the End, starring Xander Berkeley. I won't go into it as much as I did on the stream last night, but the whole plot is it's kind of like a Faustian thing. He's only known as the man, and he tends to have monologues with people in classic diner booths. So I don't know if there's any reference there, but it was too... coincidental not to
yeah note. I thought it was interesting that they went with the Denny's and not a Shoney's. I think that was a deliberate choice, right, to sort of separate it. I thought just the notion that a thing that people fear is a Denny's I thought was interesting.
He just wanted to give him a ride.
Yeah, that's punching down, man. Like, Denny's provides good quality food for like lots of carbs for people that want to eat late at night.
Starchy food.
I spent so many late nights in my 20s, sipping Cherry Cokes in a Denny's booth. Oh, let me tell you. No, Vanilla Cokes. Vanilla Cokes. All the Denny's menu items, when they go in, they're like, well, we might as well grab something to eat. And it's like, here's a Grand Slam. Here's a Slam sandwich and some pancake puppies and cheddar tots. And if you're here for the hole, it's in the men's room.
Wait, what? The hole? Yeah.
The fear hole.
The fact that there was a TV VCR combo still, like, they can't be making that much money, as is evidenced by the TV VCR combo. But then the video that they press play on, I like
the
that.
The how to hole instructional video.
The best part about that video was the music in the background. I was like, it feels Twilight Zone-y. The music, because it was like, bunk, 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 bunk.
I like the subtle things, like the guy standing at the urinal that's just looking back like, are you filming a video in here right now? And then the person that like steps out of the stall looks right into camera and then like, oh, and like closes the stall back up, like,
yeah.
Just visual gags that may not have even been written in the script, but I thought were fantastic.
Hey, Gaddafi, are you thirsty?
That's a dated reference. We both shit our pants. You're looking at the two newest members of the whole club. Oh. And then Summer's response, okay, sluts.
I have to admit that the first thing I thought when they're going into a Denny's for a fear hole is, oh, really? Are you guys going there? Are you guys going there for the glory hole? Which is essentially when you put your picture up on a cork board outside a stall. That's essentially what you're doing. I love this line. I'm glad you put this in there. Time travel is the Long Island iced tea of science fiction.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like that's the personal opinion of somebody in the writer's room that they just wrote into the script. It could be Dan's, who knows?
You know how Dad feels about science time travel.
I like all the bits of Rick de-aging, mm-hmm. where he's, just, you know, injecting himself with something to make him look younger.
Yeah. And the rehash of that when Morty's growing up too, and the Rick wig, there's a little wig on the head. That's cool.
Rick referring to Beth and Diane as basically NPCs. Beth has like a comment like, yeah, welcome to the family or whatever, when he's basically blowing that off. It's interesting because it nods again to that idea of everyone being replaceable except for Morty, right? So, Rick and Morty are the only ones that matter. Everybody else is basically NPCs. Their individual plot lines don't matter.
That's a very good point, Travis. Very adept observation.
Thanks.
Adept.
I've watched the episode too many times.
Which is three. I'm not a fearologist. Sticking with Morty coming up with new words. I'm not a fearologist.
We already mentioned the singing robot. The fact that it has memories of being a human child is especially dark.
No. The second verse was really good. It was going to ask you to come to the zoo with a family.
So good. The ducks talking that just curse at each other and talk about how yummy bread is.
Hey, Greg! fuck, Greg! Give me the bread! Fuck!
Yum bread. Yeah.
Rick and Diane's drinking contest. That in itself wasn't my favorite bit, but the bartender at the end, that they're going all out, and the bartender's like, no, come on, save yourself or something like that.
Choose life. Yeah, I like that just like they pan just off to the side and they're like trying to resuscitate one of the aliens on the ground, and they're just still going at it, you know, shot for shot.
I don't know if you've ever been to this next place in our favorite bits, Travis, but do you remember Showbiz Pizza? Are you ready for Showbiz Pizza?
the regional predecessor of Chuck E. Cheese's?
I'm ready to see a bear play
the inspiration
banjo.
Inspiration of Five Nights at Freddy's, perhaps? Five Nights at Freddy's,
yeah. I love that, and that's definitely a reference that nobody under the age of 38 will get.
I'm ready to see that bear play a banjo or something, he says. Like, everything about that is so bizarre, because, like, of all the dates you could do, of all the dates to go on, and Rick would wear a blazer, Showbiz Pizza. All right. Interesting.
Which I mean, adds extra evidence to the fact that maybe some of this is true, because Morty may have seen Rick and Beth, or not Rick or Beth. Maybe Rick and Diane take Beth to a showbiz, right?
Who knows?
Why else would an 11-year-old, or however old Morty is, know what Showbiz Pizza is?
I don't know. My son does, but he watches a lot of YouTube videos.
So that's true.
Anyway, moving on, we see Morty with a whole bunch of attempts at sort of hacking the hole. He starts to try and really lean into his fear of not being accepted. Some of the things he uses is a list of the things he likes about Jessica that he shows to a bully. It's his list of 5 things. It only has 4 things on it. So I didn't pull a screenshot of the
either.
List, but there's some really interesting things on there. Like one of them is like how her skin is so beautiful, it makes my wiener hurt or something. some real classic bits on there. He then later trust falls some strangers in front of a convenience store. And finally, he gets himself a part in 3 days of rain.
I know all the words, and I refuse to prove that until you cast me.
That's good stuff.
We're going to spend 10 to 15 minutes on this next conversation about you can be great or you can be around forever with Rick and Diane talking about their various versions of Lost.
Yeah, I mean, let's cut to the chase here. Their Lost commentary is easily one of my best parts of this episode.
Easily.
As a longtime Lost fan, as the Blu-ray box set sits 3 feet over my shoulder behind me. I love Lost. I'm glad that they talked about it. But I call out this line specifically: you can be great or you can be around forever. We've joked a few times during this podcast about a 10-season arc coming up for Rick and Morty. I'm very curious if this was meta commentary about Rick and Morty itself, and whether or not the show, an adult animated series, can maintain greatness. Can it be great and last a long time? You have shows like The Simpsons, Your Family Guys, things like that, that have been around a very long time. South Park, another example. And some of those shows were very great early on. Some of them have wavered. Others have gone through waves where they kind of trail off and then get really good for a while. So I wonder
and
if
some
that's...
And some shows are The Walking Dead as a metaphor.
Yes.
That's what I really like about it. And I agree. The other thing about that Lost discussion is that Rick also is one of the people who doesn't understand they weren't in purgatory the entire time. Like, even the smartest man in the universe can be wrong sometimes. They weren't dead the entire time. Please watch the show. Or at least
I'm really curious if, like, you know, Damon Lindelof is like a Rick and Morty fan. And like, he hears that. Like, what does he think when he hears that?
He's
just like, all right, whatever.
F these. Watch The Leftovers. Okay, all right. The 3 days of rain rap. I just love that they end with 3 days of rain.
that whole bit is pretty great. I don't know how to rap. I don't know how to rhyme. When Morty has the mic, if you go back and rewatch this episode, keep your eyes on Rick the entire time that Morty has the mic, because he's like dancing behind him and then like kind of like pushing him towards the stage and stuff, and like
and he catches the mic.
It's really funny. It's really great.
Nudity always makes theater serious and good.
Yeah, the New York Times reporter that happened to be at the Harry Herbson High School production of 3 Days of Rain. his I don't know. I I thought that was a clever bit to throw in there as well.
Is this going to be a whole thing? A whole thing? No wordplay, Morty. Get it? Like the whole
subtle
thing.
It's a quick joke, but it's one that I appreciate.
It is. And I didn't realize what the joke was until you spelled it out in the show notes. Whole versus whole.
It's going to be a whole thing. No wordplay, Morty. We talked all about the time passage montage, talking about the idea that they actually lived out all of that time. Yeah, really, really funny. And of course, another great musical arrangement and song by Ryan Elder.
The Rick putting Morty's picture up, I want to say of an episode full of really good bits, this one was not funny. It was subtle. There was not a lot of attention put to it, but it's Rick's reaction to the hole, to then the corkboard, choosing Morty over a fear of being with Diane. Like that to me, it completes the season. What makes it my favorite bit is it closes out the season in a good way, in a way that like last season's finale didn't really like end on a note of like, okay, yeah, this is a good way to end the season. This one was,
yeah, it was probably one of the more hopeful endings. With the exception of like season one, where it's just Rick, Morty, and Summer with the rest of time frozen. I love my grandkids. Just like, let's party and watch Titanic.
Yeah.
And
it was also like a low key, not a low key, but like a low key way, a good way. Like there wasn't like a grand adventure at the tail end of it. They were just in a Denny's bathroom. But there's still a certain sense of closure to the episodes that we saw from episode one to episode 10 that I really, really liked. And so I really, if that is the one thing I can say about the season, and maybe we'll have an episode talking about the season as a whole, I think that really puts that that bow on top for Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah. I 100% agree. Talking about best and worst parts of the episode, you make an argument for that being the best part. We could make the argument that them just talking about Lost at all is the best part. And maybe I would make that. In terms of worst parts, I don't know that this is necessarily bad, but there's a scene where Morty goes back to the Denny's. He's trying to figure out how to get out of the hole. And he goes back and the man in the suit is there in a booth. And they have a conversation. And part of that conversation is about Rick's fear, and the things that Rick fears. And one of those things is the fear of happiness, because it's it takes a special someone to be afraid of happiness. And the man breaks down about how unfortunate happiness can be. And it's a very cynical approach. And he talks about the best case scenario being that you die together and how terrible that is. It really makes an argument against being happy, strictly based on the fact that happiness will eventually end. And I think that's, I don't know, that just bummed me out. I don't know.
It's funny that it bums you out, because in the classic film, I forget who does it. But anyways, the classic film Donnie Darko, there is the line where Donnie Darko, the character, is thinking about the book that he got from this old woman about the philosophy of time travel. And basically it's everyone dies alone. and how bumming that kind of concept is. But here's the thing, Travis, and here's the thing for everyone who's listening. Yes, we all die alone, but we don't live alone. And we can enjoy our happiness with our friends, our family, our dogs, our cats, our lizards, our snakes, our tarantulas, our goldfish, our various pets and our products.
Podcast co-hosts.
I said Unity. Friends and family.
Sure.
But you know, like that's how we live our lives. We live happy. Sure, we die alone, but you know, the best we can hope for is that, you know, we have those that we love surrounding us when we leave this mortal coil.
Yeah. Speaking of those we love surrounding us, I think that's a perfect time to move into our final segment. Woo! Listener suggestions and short outs. Of course, if there's anything we missed about this episode or anything that you think we should talk about, hit us up. We'd love to get an email or talk to you on socials about this. But some other people that have reached out to us this week. Brandon, who do you got first in listener suggestions and short outs?
All right. Well, I talked about this at the beginning of the episode, Travis. I think calling out Blue Sky at the very top of the episode is getting us more short outs from Blue Sky than any other website. But so this one is by Disheveled Peasant. I am sitting here watching the movie Pixels. Please don't judge. LOL. And I feel like a parody of this as a Rick and Morty episode would be hilarious.
I can definitely see that.
I can definitely see that. I would love to see it because I like video games. I love Adam Sandler, maybe one of those things.
I'm trying to think if I actually watched Pixels as a film.
It's fun. It's fun. You'd like it.
I don't recall if I have. I should check it out.
You watch
the first 5 minutes and be like, oh yeah, I saw this, and turn it off. I want to short out a few folks who in the last week decided to follow us over on twitch.tv/apatheticenthusiasm. As we've mentioned several times in this podcast, we did do a live stream this week. So a big thanks to Sun Krabby, the Butter Robot 42, Sam Halfacre, Kylie Barf Connectic, Heist Nation Marks, all of you and your complicated screen names. Thank you for following us on Twitch. Who knows the next time we go live on there? But now you'll know because you follow us. And big thanks to everybody else that follows us on Twitch as well.
Now you know. Have a couple more short outs. Matt Hart, old Matt Hart, no from Twitter. Just caught the episode where you mentioned UK listeners. That's me. British flag. UK flag?
Yay. Thank you.
Sorry, American.
Heart
stupid.
You.
Did you mention you were on Blue Sky too? So here I am. Episode 10 in 2 days. And then he responds later. Oh, damn. What a finale. Are they still in the hole? Did it really wrap up or going to spend the next 2 seasons in there? Which is a good line.
Yeah, I thought that was if we come out of this hole in 2 seasons or whatever, which feels like a thing that they can keep in their back pocket in the writer's room if they want to like undo anything. yeah. Maybe that's the 10 season arc is after 10 seasons, they just like pop out of the hole again.
Yeah. And they just start with season one. they just do variations of season one throughout the whole damn thing. Let's see. Want to shout out some. I didn't have a Reddit post of the week. I do want to shout out all of the people in the subreddit because you know,
a million of you.
There's over 2 million, Travis. There's so many folks in there, and yes, I banned a couple of you. I've deleted your post because I don't want to hear that stuff. And we've decided as a moderator, you know, all that stuff. But we appreciate all of you out there as well. And yeah, like doing the live posts, doing the post the post episode discussions has been fun and been like this season is probably more than I've ever interacted with everybody. And so just shout out to all of you. I know there's some toxic people around, but I hope you all know that by and large you are a wonderful fandom. So I appreciate being able to interact.
I have one last short out, and it's really much in the same vein of appreciation. Just a short out to all of you that listen, that continue to subscribe, to download this podcast, that continue to enjoy our opinions about this weird show that we all watch. It's so fun going through a season because it's like a sprint, right? We have a whole year where there aren't new episodes. We come up with some content, but it's few and far between. Obviously the last off season has been one for the record books, but it's so fun to step into a season knowing that there's going to be 10 weeks of episodes that we can all get excited about, that we can talk about. So thank you to you for just listening to this and continuing to download and support this podcast. We appreciate it, and we hope that you'll stick around throughout the off season as we have more interviews, more recaps, and get ready for season 8 sometime next year.
Oh boy, that's really exciting stuff. We just have to maintain that enthusiasm until 2024. You can follow us on Apathetic Enthusiasm if you are kind of apathetic about that. So anyways, I am Brandon. That is Travis.
I'm Travis.
And we appreciate you all the time, always. And until next episode, hopefully an interview episode. I'm Brandon again.
I'm Travis. Bye, everybody.